Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Today is December the 8th, 1972, a Friday. The following interview is with Doris Jones, Counselor Robert Finch's personal secretary. It will take place in the second floor of the West Wing of the White House. Terry Good will conduct the interview.
Okay, let's see. Yes, it's registered. The questions are basic. I'll avoid, unless I slip, asking you any question that would elicit your opinion or evaluation or appraisal about people, programs, policies, because again, we're only trying to get a very superficial grasp of your role in the office, and hopefully the questions are all very factual. You joined the White House staff when Mr. Finch came over from HEW, right. I take it, which mm-hmm. would be approximately
June 70.
And your departure date is still somewhat up in the air, but
My departure date is December 31st.
Alright. And I assume you will be going out to California.
Yes, I'm going with him to California.
Your title while you were here on the White House, personal secretary?
Yes. According to civil service standards, I think the title is confidential assistant for that purpose. But yes, personal secretary is really what I've been as far as in the office.
Mr. Finch's office staff is divided between the West Wing here and over in the EOB.
Which isn't terribly satisfactory, but it's normal for around here, I understand.
And the people that worked in this portion of it were...
We had so little space, and it had to be limited to 3 or 4 people, so it was the people who had to have access to him all the time.
This would have included you?
His assistant, Ray Hanslick, and his secretary, and then a third girl who simply answered the telephones and tried to handle incoming calls of people.
And before Ray Hanslick, it was...
George Grassman. Right.
And at some point in there, Chuck Lichtenstein?
No, Chuck was not here. Chuck was a speechwriter for Mr. Finch.
Okay.
He goes way back, too, of course, as you probably know,
yes,
for the vice president. And then he was at HEW with us and came over here for a short time, but he left then about 6 months after we came here, which would be the first of probably 71, to go with Dean Birch, the FCC.
Glenn Wagner was another person that...
Yes, we had Glenn Wagner for a short time, and then he decided to go to the Senate and left us.
I talked with him just briefly several days ago when he was back,
mm-hmm.
and I hope maybe to get an interview with him on Monday, perhaps.
Oh, good.
When he got to New York.
He was not here. He was here about 5 or 6 months.
How would you describe your role as the confidential assistant personal secretary to Mr. Finch?
Well, of course, my work really was, I suppose, fairly normal for a personal secretary in that I handled his personal calls, all of his personal business. I handled his appointments, schedule on a daily basis. I didn't handle his travel schedule because it got to be, we traveled so much that Warren Hendricks eventually got to taking over that. Oh my, how do you describe what you did?
I know that's very difficult.
I'm probably the closest person on a continuing basis to Mr. Finch, so I was privy to a lot of confidential information and a lot of his side of his work and things that involved the White House that possibly no one else did.
Were you in a position where you would more or less determine his schedule in many instances and then consult with him for approval?
I maintained his schedule practically on my own because I've worked for him and know him so well that I very rarely had to ask. Usually don't have to ask him unless it was... I pretty much kept it myself and kept track of him.
Did you, on occasion or frequently, draft correspondence for his...
Oh, yes. However, we find this almost as soon as we came here that the largest volume of mail that we had was an awful lot of casework and things from California that we fell into because California was without a Republican senator. And all of a sudden we realized that we were getting a tremendous amount of mail that I recognize as that kind of mail because I had worked for a Republican senator. And one day I said, look, you know, what are we doing? So we got into an awful lot of those things. I did not have to worry about that still. But I did draft his, I'd always have done his own personal things. And always anything between he and the president or anything of a confidential nature with other White House staff people or cabinet members. But routine mail and the type I'm talking about was handled by Rita Danenhauer, who did all the drafting and was very good.
Did you have, in any sense, a routine schedule, a routine day that could you, from one day to the next, have some idea of what you would be doing the following day?
Oh, yes, with the exception of individual appointments, we have it. We've tried to keep, Mr. Finch is not, he's difficult to keep on a tight schedule or on a rigid schedule. He's a little bit, he likes his freedom a little bit, so, but of course I have learned how to play that. And but we did start him because he attended his early morning staff meetings every morning, and then of course I've tried to allow time with our own staff people, and then I tried to fit in the afternoons outside appointments, keep the morning to getting our work done, and he most always had luncheon meetings. He's not much for luncheons themselves out of the office. He's more apt to bring someone in here and bring them in a sandwich. But we work long hours because that's the way he is. He's in here. He was in here every morning at 7 o'clock. He was picked up every morning at 6:30. And then I would get in at, is this what you're interested in?
Yes,
I would,
yes.
I'd arrive at 8. The other people came in at 9. And I would catch him for 15 minutes before he went to his 8:15 meeting, and very often those 15 minutes were the most important of the day for me because I got to zero in on him about what we were doing. And then, as I said, from then on, we tried to fill the morning with appointments with people around here, either other White House staff or our own, to work where projects were concerned and needed his assistance. Or with the Cabinet Committee on Spanish Speaking, any in-house appointments. And then I tried to hold the afternoon for outside appointments. But of course, schedules here are hard to get because the president calls or Bob Haldeman, why you're, you know, it all goes by the wayside.
This 15 minutes in the morning that you had with him, was this for the most part an opportunity for you to more or less give him some idea of what you'd set up for that particular
right.
day in the way of meetings?
Right, and to give him backup material on the people he was going to see, or what he was going to be doing, fill him in on calls that came in after he left the night before, or calls that I knew we needed to make that day, or things that were a deadline that day where we had something from Bruce Curley or Mr. Haldeman. As you know, we do from time to time with deadlines, because sometimes then I would not get back in for an awful long time, so that was always my best time before the phones rang.
Well, then for the afternoon period, then, your contacts with him would be more or less hit and miss, depending
Absolutely.
Upon what his schedule was.
Because he almost always had, his afternoons are almost always filled with appointments. Now, we tried because of the fact that we had 7 or 8 people across the street who sometimes would go days without seeing him. We tried, and this didn't always work because he just got bogged down here, but we tried to have his afternoon appointments in his EOB office. He tried to spend some part of each day over there. So
that must have been very difficult, having the office split.
It was.
Logistically and communication-wise.
But it really, you know, it worked. It wasn't that bad. It could have been a lot easier, but we got along fine with a great staff, and everybody congenial, and everybody gets along, and we really never had any problems that way.
Everyone that we've talked with on Mr. Finch's staff has said almost the same thing that you
right?
just said. Everyone was compatible, personable, outgoing, friendly.
Well, that's, I must say, and they may have all said this, that's because of him, because that's the way he is. And he's great to work for, and everyone who works for him, you know, we never lose anybody. The only reason anybody left here was if they got married, pregnant or ran for the Senate. I mean, you know, we still have people that are on and on and on. When we go back now, our biggest battle we're fighting are people who worked formerly as lieutenant governor or in other things in California who want to quit their jobs and come back to them. You know, and that's the man. That's the kind of loyalty the president inspires, so I must say.
It's incredible that everyone seems to say almost mm-hmm. the same thing about him. I asked one of the other people on the staff if this outgoing, refreshing, informal personality reflected the man. Oh yes, definitely, no question about it. And every staff member seems to have that same type of personality.
He's a little like, Mr. Finch is a little like the president in that you wouldn't, until you know him, you wouldn't understand this side of him. And he doesn't always appear publicly to be this kind of a man. Of course, that's one thing they say about the president. I've known the president for 20 years. And to this day, if I run into him, we have a little, you know, it's a wonderful relationship. I don't see him often, but we do know each other well. And when people say to me, you know, that Richard Nixon is cold, and it's just incredible to me because I don't know him that way. And my boss is much the same way. When we have new staff come on, girls were just petrified for a while, which made me laugh, you know, because he seems so stern. And until you get to know him.
I've only met him once, and that was very briefly. It was just more or less of a handshake. But I, from a distance, perhaps it was just the way he dressed and the way he acted, but I always felt like there was a man that was somewhat informal in nature, but with a very outgoing personality. I've always had a warm feeling towards mm-hmm. Bob Finch. And,
it's a great guy.
It's been borne out from comments that members of the staff have made. How late in the evenings would you generally work, Doris?
Well, without exception, I must say that, well, I tried to work it so that I'm here till he leaves, so that could be never before 7, and it varied from 7 to 8. Now, two girls out here tried to alternate so one could stay with me because at that time of day, again, was the wrap-up time. And I would almost always be in here with him or we would be talking. And then, you see, since we inspired so many calls and things from California, with that 3-hour time difference, we'd get very busy about 6 o'clock at night, you see. And, of course, this California syndrome, or whatever you want to call it with us, we inherited because these people had always come to Richard Nixon, you see. And you can't get through to the president. And poor Rosemary can't do it also. We got a lot, we had so much of that. And it was all, you know, that's 6 and 7 o'clock. They come back from lunch and start calling. So that really accounted for a lot of our late hours.
Didn't you work for a period of time with Senator Murphy?
Uh-huh, I did.
I would assume then that the contacts and the acquaintances that you had made on his behalf,
right.
They followed.
So you see, they followed me, and people want, even if it just was getting a pass to the White House, we got all those calls because they weren't about to call Senator Grantson or Senator Tenney. So we really.
Would there be any way of estimating the percentage of correspondence or telephone calls? Of the total you got, what percentage of those were from California constituents? Do you have any ballpark figure on that? I've been very fascinated by that because a number of the members of the staff have all commented about this.
And you see so many people, every now and then I'd hear something would almost be critical. Well, Bob Finch, you know, all he's doing is running for office and all. Now that, a lot of these people certainly are his friends too, but you see his friends in California are the president's friends. They're just right, and of course, Senator Murphy too, but these two men have been acquainted so long that it's just all the same thing. And you couldn't say to somebody from Whittier, California, or somebody who was a supporter of the president, I can't call the Department of Interior and set up an appointment, because they didn't know who else to call, you see. That sort of thing, I would say, probably in the correspondence area, would be almost 40 or 50% of our mail. Telephone calls, I would say at least 50%.
The other correspondence that you got, Is there any way to categorize that in terms of where it came from or the subject matters that it dealt with?
I don't think we could do it on an area basis. A lot of it would be inspired by his speeches, because he did, as you, we have figures on his speaking. He made 400 to 500 major speeches a year. I think that's how we have. We just finished doing a little thing on it. A lot of it, as he traveled around, you see, and the press that follows that, then we would have a lot of mail then as an outgrowth of that. So some of it was that. It's hard to know. An awful lot of course is mail that they wrote because they knew it was counselor to the president and wanted to get their ideas and their thoughts to the president through him. So a lot of it was that.
This mail that came in, Rita Dannenhauer would be the one that initially saw it.
Right. Of course, she worked for Mr. Nixon, you know.
That's right.
You know
that. That's right.
We are literally all, this office was really trained by Rosemary and Mr. Nixon, because we all almost all worked, the older ones, should I say, the ones with seniority, worked for him. So we work very much like they do. And so that's why. And then as we brought people in, we trained them like, so it's sort of the same, you know.
Well, that's interesting. Our contact with the Nixon Foundation is Loie Gaunt, of course.
Well, Loie trained all of us.
Well, I assume that was
we're all Loie Gaunt proteges, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Well, before I had the chance to meet you, someone said, well, if you know Loie Gaunt, you've got some idea of the personality of Doris Jones.
So I came
in here feeling as though I knew you already.
Oh, dear.
This correspondence that came in, that Rita would open mm-hmm. and more or less sort out, I take
right.
it.
Right.
What determination would she use in deciding this should go, I suppose, to you
right.
for further review and then
right.
perhaps on to Mr. Finch?
Right.
Was there any sort of guidelines that you set
yes,
up?
Yes, there were. She sent over to us all reading, huge volume of reading material. Of course, he is an avid reader and he wanted to see every single thing. A great deal of reading material, that all came directly to him. Then I would get all of his bills, his personal correspondence, all of, and that included personal friends. Not, when I say personal, I don't mean personal business, but what's termed personal correspondence. She would route to the other people in the staff as necessary, mail that would concern upcoming speeches, mail that concerned this so-called casework we did with departments. Anything that could went directly to the people. Our boss is great. He doesn't require, he can't see every piece of mail because we got a lot of mail every day. And he trusts his staff and we just handled it. Now he signs every piece of mail. He's a stickler for that. He doesn't buy this, you know, he'll sit there. The day we came back up to the day after the election, I think he signed 700 or 800 pieces of mail. Oh. He likes to see that mail, and let me tell you that if there's one typo, he will find
is
it.
That
I
right?
will not, and the rest of us it can go through three people, and he'll hit. Yeah, it's fun at you. So we can't put anything over on him. But Rita would wrap the mail, you know, as long as it was fairly routine. Mm-hmm. And of course, we did enough. Oh, so many things like messages. We worked with Alishka, especially for California. And so we tried to do those things routinely. He does not get into those. He let us. But he always signed off on them and knew what we were doing.
This was another thing that at least two people that I talked with commented about, was that Mr. Finch gave them free rein,
right.
a lot of responsibility, but he expected you to produce. But he
right.
had the confidence in you, evidently.
That's
yeah.
right. Which is, it's a great way to work, you see, because you work better.
Yes.
And that's another reason you're willing to work long hours and put in the time, because you know he appreciates it. But through all of that, he knows what's going on. That's my point.
Well,
he
must, if all of this funnels into
he knows
into
what's
him.
Going on, and one of the reasons he does that is, he's, and this may be because he is at heart a politician, he likes to know, and he'll remember. And this is another trait of Mr. Nixon's. He may be in California when somebody says, I remember your letter. And he will remember. Of course, as you know, the president's
yes,
very good at
I
that.
Yes, I understand. He's got a phenomenal memory.
Oh, and he has that trait. So that's one reason he likes to see the mail, because he will remember when he runs into people.
In your little sessions in the morning and in the evening, do you often make suggestions to him as to whether or not he should accept this invitation or how to respond to this particular piece of
right.
correspondence? Or should you have this meeting with this individual that's asking you? In other words, you're in that position
oh, yes.
where you...
In fact, more times than none, I might even draft an answer to a sticky letter so that all he would have to do would be to, you know, fix it up a little. Very rarely. In fact, he hasn't dictated to me in 4 years.
Oh, my.
So that's one reason I'm going with him. Not that he couldn't do without me, but we're both so broken into each other that it's,
yeah.
you know.
You're on the same wavelength.
Right.
Much.
Uh-huh. Invitations, I usually, at least to myself, made the decisions and then would show them to him. And he almost invariably goes along with me because I know exactly what he can do and what he can't do and what he should do. And we think enough alike now that it's, you know.
One member of the staff said that often when they felt as though Mr. Finch should either do something or not do it, but didn't feel they were in a position to make the suggestion, they could come to you, and you, in your own very diplomatic way,
yeah.
Mr. Finch, would be able to more or less direct his thinking along those lines. And,
well, I think that's probably true to some extent. But we don't tell him that.
Okay, mum's the word on that. The amount of paperwork that you were involved in, the letters that you drafted, will they reflect, will there be anything on them to indicate that you were the one that actually did that work?
No, because most always he made changes and it would just be a beginning thought. Now, this is pretty much in the mail I did. For instance, the mail that Rita would answer, routine type mail. She didn't even draft. That was all just done in final form. Because so much of that is routine. It's
mm-hmm.
on maybe on legislation, matters that we know exactly how he stands and you don't require. So much of mine was more of a personal or confidential nature and things that, you know. But no, there would be no, absolutely not. Unless I had somebody else type for me, in which time, in case they would put their initials and mine on it. But between he and I, generally, there wasn't, if I did it.
But we can assume that in most cases that involved personal correspondence with old friends, close acquaintances,
mm-hmm.
or matters of high political sensitivity within the White House, and outside, that you would have had some input or some knowledge of
oh,
that.
Oh, yes. In many cases, probably I'm be the only one who might in some of them. Uh-huh.
All right, well, we've kind of got you zeroed in now, and
mm-hmm.
I think even though your name or your initials might not appear on
right.
material in the files, would it be safe to assume that you would say you're knowledgeable about it or
right.
perhaps had some...
I also tried to take time, and some days it wasn't possible, to read the mail before he got it that he signed, so I would have also an idea then. It wasn't possible every day. You know, I'm a great believer in everybody knowing everything there is to know when possible.
You avoid an awful lot of...
You really do.
Communication snafus, it could be very embarrassing.
Exactly. And in the large office, that's impossible. But we had just the right size staff, you see. Always 11 or 12 people. And with that many, it's a little easier to stay on top.
It's amazing to me that he did what he did with a staff, relatively speaking, is very small.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, considering the amount of traveling he did, that's right. And, out of that number, you see there were four of us right here. What did I say? And then we have most of the time six or seven people across the street. So, but everybody was everybody had their own little niche. Also on our staff, we were very lucky, everybody was experienced. And everybody had a fairly good background. We didn't, except for maybe a typist, we did have one slot that was filled with generally a fairly young girl. Because every office needs somebody that does nothing but typing, and that's not very exciting work for anybody who's had much experience. But other than that slot, everyone had, was very, I think, had a fairly good background for exactly what they were doing.
I've been impressed with all the people I've talked with.
So.
In terms of the traveling that he did, you said that you were not always involved in setting those up, but you probably always had some input in the decision.
Oh,
as
yes.
To whether
well,
or
first
not
of all, most of the time I went. I did most of the traveling, too. But where I had to get out of it just because I didn't have the time was. After we got to the, let's start at HUW as a matter of fact, where he'd have three or four speeches a week. Besides the speechwriter who wrote the speech then and the travel arrangements, then for each of the appearances, it took a great deal of, you know, time on the briefing. We always provided him with a book when he went. In fact, this is, we got this from the president, the black book that they've always done for him, which I had done, used to, had done in years past. And we carried that on where we always gave them a book with the backup material and briefing on the area and the people and the whole thing, you know, accompanying the speech. And that takes on an awful lot of time. Now,
were
that's one thing that Bonnie did that.
Okay.
We eventually had to have someone else do that because I couldn't do it. Then Warren Hendricks has all got into the logistics. So it came to the point that while I knew about all these things, I didn't. Got away from actually doing them continually.
When you traveled with him, did your role and responsibilities change any, or?
Not at all. Not one bit. As long as there was a telephone, which there always was, that's where I was.
The telephone calls that came through you, would there be a record of those? Did
yes,
you
I keep a record every single call we've ever had, whether it's completed. I also had a form where I kept track of what we did, you know, so that we would know for some people call back and say, you know.
It's a very important record.
It is.
Uh-huh. And I think you become aware of that if on one occasion somebody calls and you don't have the information.
Exactly.
You're like, gee, why didn't I keep a note of that?
Because I guess our background with the president, I got so many calls from people who didn't know where to go to. And maybe they'd written to the president about something, or they had, a lot of Californians, you know, that had known him, and you can't imagine how many people in California think they know the president of the United States. It's just, as Rose and I always say when we get, you know, they're just, everyone out there is a personal friend. And they almost always require a follow-up call, you see, to find out the information, and then a call back to them to report. And that's time consuming.
So you did handle a lot of that by phone, as opposed
to? I would guess in a normal day's time during the week, I would handle any place from 20 to 25 calls like that. That's just, you know, where I really had to get an answer and get back to people.
And each one of those generated one or two telephone calls.
Oh, sure. And then a report back. And I'm a stickler for that. You get a call back, whether I have the information or you don't. If there's anything I hate, it's people who leave you hanging and you don't go back to them. And that irritates people.
Oh, yes.
And I made up my mind, and everyone who worked with us was told the same thing, that you always go back and report something and not get back to them.
Whether it's a matter of we're still searching for the information.
Exactly. Right. Especially being in the White House. Of course, I'm very conscious of being in the White House and the importance of representing the president. And I think the people who worked with us felt that way because we also tried to impress that on them. Because I think that is so important.
Yes, it is. That may be the only time in that person's life that they may call the White
absolutely.
House. And if that one time.
That's right. And it reflects on him.
Yes, it does.
Because, you know, if you're the only contact they have at the White House, they're not going to remember your name.
No.
Your name means nothing to them. All I know is that we're trying to get a message to or some information from the president. So.
I'm just sitting here thinking, my gosh, you have worked in a vice president's office. You have worked in a senator's office.
I worked 8 years for a congressman. My first job in Washington was the congressman who took Mr. Nixon's place when he went to the Senate.
And who was that?
Pat Hillings. And I worked for him the 8 years he was in Congress. And that's how I became so close in line with the Nixon staff. Because he was a congressman, and we went into his seat, and we were just like a little family. And that's really how my relationships with him were formed. As a matter of fact, the year that Mr. Nixon ran for vice president, my boss won in the primary on both tickets. Those were in the days of cross-fouling in California. So we didn't have to campaign, so we devoted our full time to him and to that campaign. So that was the beginning of it all, 52. An amazing 20 years. And in that 20 years, is all but 2 years have I spent, really, literally, you know, in some way or another in this.
But now when Mr. Finch was lieutenant governor, you were back in California.
That was, no, I was with Senator Murphy.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I was with Senator Murphy. I had left him with the promise that if he came back to Washington. My folks live in Ohio, and California is so far away from home for me. And I always resist moving back out there because of the distance, but I'll go, you know, and then after a while I generally end up coming back again. That's why I've had so many moves back.
Well then, are you an Ohioan by birth?
Right, uh-huh. Yeah.
What brought you to Washington? And how did you end up with a California congressman?
I came from Ohio in 1951 just because I wanted to work in the government and get away from home. Not from home, but
right.
To try, like there's all girls who come
sure.
here. And I was here just 6 months when I just fell into this job. And I've been in politics ever since. And I love it.
You'd have to.
Uh-huh.
You'd have to.
Yeah, I do.
How much contact did you have with, first of all, George Grasma, followed by Glenn Wagner, and then subsequently with Ray Hansley.
Mm-hmm.
From what I have been able to learn, these men had a role that might be defined as Mr. Finch's alter ego or his
mm-hmm.
administrative assistant.
Yeah.
What was your relationship
right.
with these three?
Now, with George Grasmick, it was a very close relationship because we had worked together before. He had worked with us in 1960 and at AGW. So he was here too in this part of this office, and he and I always worked in tandem. As far as we absolutely know, we worked together and very closely together. Glenn Wagner worked in the other office, and I did not. He did not do quite the same thing. He spent a little more time working on projects and things more than the alter ego type. Now Ray did more what George did. Ray is more of an alter ego type to Mr. Finch and works more closely with him. Glenn wasn't here quite long enough to get into that, and I did not work closely with him. But the other two I have, and we work just right together. And we sort of almost split the... Mr. Finch has a tendency to, as far as direct communication, he'll work between two of us and then the lines go out from there, more than running everyone on the staff in and out all day long. Of course, that's not too efficient. I'm sure no one does that. So that we are always the two that primarily get the output, and then it goes from us. So we have to work closely together because we're obviously going to be the ones who get blamed if it doesn't get done.
This morning session from 8 to 8:15 that you mentioned you had with Mr. Finch, would either Dr. Grasmuck or Ray participate
mm-hmm.
in those regularly, occasionally, sometimes,
yes,
or always?
they, Ray's always attended the 7:30 meeting because the boss generally couldn't. He likes that time. That's when he does his reading and thinking. And he found that it was more productive for him to miss that meeting. So Ray generally covered that for him, and then he would come in and brief him while on there. Sometimes it would overlap in that 15 minutes. More times than not, I was alone. They were not here, but sometimes they were. They generally came in at another time in the morning. Because 15 minutes isn't too long, the conference
no,
too much.
I know
and in that time, maybe the phone would ring once or twice. You know.
Did he often use you as a sounding board for some of his policy ideas? If he'd gotten an idea of doing this or doing that in regards to health or education, he might say, how does this sound to you, Doris?
Right. Yes, now at HEW, that was such a horrendous job, and we were so busy, and now not as much because we're so many people, and we had the wonderful Pat Gray as his assistant there. And I just didn't have time, and that would not have really applied there. Now, I got into some of the crises there simply because being a secretary, I had to be in taking notes and things. But I would say not as much simply because there were so many high-level people that I just didn't have the chance or the need, you know. Here, possibly a little more because more of it was of a political nature and a different type. But over there, you know, was staggering. So.
The meetings that Mr. Finch would have, either in this office or perhaps over there in the EOB in the afternoons, would you on some occasions or frequently or always set in as a note taker or?
No, he doesn't like that. He thinks that it disarms people who aren't talking if there's somebody in the room. So he doesn't like that. We did carry on something here. We'd started at HEW when it involved meetings with people who were going to need follow through on. I always tried to make sure that Ray or Bonnie, if it was in her area, sat in on the meeting just strictly for follow up and to be able to carry it on. But as a rule, with private appointments, there wasn't anybody because he just doesn't think it's, you know, he thinks people prefer to meet with you alone. But if it, you know, the need was there, we had one person, never, generally not me.
Would there be occasions where he might sit down after a meeting and just write down some notes about the meeting and then give that
right
to you?
Now, in that respect, one of the things I always did at the end of the day, I tried at the end of each day, and sometimes I didn't get done till morning, to go over every phone call, see what he had told or promised on the phone. And I did that with every appointment. Every appointment at the end of each day, I knew exactly that either Ray had been in the meeting and then I could forget about it. If no one had been in with him, I tried to just check with him and see, did you tell him you'd call him? Did you tell him you'd see him again? Or will he be back? Or does he need or want anything? Because if you don't do that every day, there's no way to remember. Then you see people, when they would call back or follow up, it came to me, generally. Most of his friends, most of the people that he's acquainted with will call and talk to me. That's the one good thing.
The job sounds staggering. I admire
well,
you. You don't look like you're exhausted.
It's not to me. I guess when you start talking about it, you know. It's not that much when you get just to doing it all the time, I don't think.
You're an admirable person, believe me. I, were there any projects that you did get involved in that went on and on and on? I've heard of some of the projects that Mr. Finch was involved in. Youth affairs,
right.
Education, women, the Peru earthquake. I think there was the tuna fishing.
Oh, yes, that's...
And some of his foreign trip to Europe as well as to South America.
Now, that's separate. The projects that you mentioned, I almost always did not get involved in. Now, somebody in the staff, we always had somebody in the staff who did, so that one person would be responsible for that. I very rarely did, just because I don't believe, you can't overlap, and there's no use doubling up on things. And very rarely did I get involved in all the ones you're discussing. I always knew, you know, tried to know what was going on. But, no, I did not. Now, the trips, the foreign trips are another matter. I was involved, and I was involved in the planning, and I accompanied him, and did, worked in the follow-up. And I might say that those foreign trips now, you know, they didn't generate a lot of publicity. There are very few people who really know that he went, or the outcome of them, but I can tell you that of any one thing that he did while he was here, he was so very good in that role as representing the president of other countries. It was interesting to see. He and Don Rumsfeld went to Europe. It was the first time that two cabinet members had ever come together, traveled together, or visited, let's see, 12 countries we went to. But it was the first time that they'd ever been as young and as personable and so on, and it was just really interesting to see the reaction. And I would say that they just did a fantastic job, which unfortunately will probably not be realized except in the something like this. I don't know if anybody else has told you that. But
Warren Hendricks mentioned that he was very much involved in setting it up and advancing it, and more or less one country ahead of them.
Exactly.
But he didn't get into the details of...
With Mr. Finch, the point that came through on these trips were, it was just amazing. I couldn't believe how these people knew of his close association with the president. The first thing they always said is, oh yes, you're the president's close friend. So it was so important that he performed well, and that he really did. But it was exciting to watch.
What was their purpose for going over there, Doris?
The European trip was a goodwill trip. The president wanted to project this youthful, I think, you know, so many tired, I shouldn't say this, senators and so on. You know, the congressional people travel abroad so much, and so many of them are trips,
Junkets.
And, you know, even from just talking to the embassy people when you go on, as we did, they get very weary of it, you know. And I think the president out here were his two young counselors who were, again, stressing the usefulness, and the one was his close friend. And it just, I think his thought was he couldn't go, and they went, and it was strictly goodwill, but of a rather high nature. And they took messages to every place they went. While none of them were certainly, they weren't, high level nature, they weren't earth shaking. They were more messages from the president. And that's why I say they won't go down in history particularly as being any great, nothing, I don't know how to put it. I think you know what I mean.
Yes, I see what you're driving at. Sometimes a goodwill mission like that accomplishes things that do not become apparent for some time thereafter. Perhaps they're never apparent. But they may have set the tone, the groundwork.
It was almost a personal thing, so that the conversations with the presidents of the countries we went to were about Mr. Nixon and so on. And it was something that was just, it was very personal between Mr. Finch and these people. And it was fascinating to me.
Did you have the opportunity or the pleasure to set in on some of these meetings that they had?
No, but I took the MemCons at the end of the day, so I...
You've got a pretty good idea of what transpired. Mm-hmm.
After each one, of course, they had to dictate exactly what happened, not for the State Department. Also, I knew pretty much when we were not allowed, we did not see them.
I'm not quite so concerned now. I've got a feeling that the record of those has been well documented. And it may be that perhaps the World Press hasn't written it up yet, but at least it is documented.
It is here, yes.
Right.
Uh-huh, pretty much
and
so.
That's
now, the South American trip, we had two State Department people with us. And it was done a little more efficiently. When we went to Europe, I was the only one along. And Don Rumsfeld took his assistant. So it was really just Don Murdoch and I. Warren was advancing. So it was a little harder because I Don and I tried to keep the record together, but the South American trip was more efficient because we had the two State Department people, and they filed their State Department MEMCONs at the end of each day, official ones. So those are a little better shape, I'm afraid, than the European trip. Then, of course, we went to Africa. We represented the president at the funeral of the president of Liberia. That was very interesting. And again, he did just a fantastic job. You know, when you're following up, as staff people are, you're hearing the people who don't know who we are, and that you could just go along and hear the comments, and you knew, you could feel the warmth. And he has a tendency to plunge in, again, like someone else we know here. And in Africa, for instance, he took a box of Nixon books along with him. And we went into a marketplace, and started handing them out to school boys. And they came, hundreds of them just came, and they almost, the Secret Service got very nervous. And he loved it, and we have some marvelous pictures of him, these books and these black schoolboys with great big eyes and big grins, just, you know, and his arms around them. And I don't know, I would say in that area, This may well be, when it's all said and done, the goodwill that Robert Finch did for the president. It's not even written down in place. And not only here, there, but in this country too. You see, he has really been the link with people from the president's past, as far as in the White House. Now when I say past, I don't mean, but from the years, the vice presidential years and all. Most of those people don't know anyone else. And I'm afraid that Herb Klein and Bob Finch and Rose Woods have been borne the brunt of all of that, and more of Bob Finch, really, more than anyone. So, and that's an important role in its own way.
Yes, very much.
Now that's probably, I see more of that than anyone else you'll talk to in the staff.
He's very much a president's alter ego in that sense.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. There are, a lot of people that feel they can talk to him. It's the same as talking to the president, because they know he knows how the president feels. And while I'm sure they're smart enough to know that he's not able to pass along every message, they know that at least the things that they're saying are getting through to someone who thinks like the president does. I would say that was evidenced by the number of calls, and people he saw.
Do you have any estimate of the amount of time he might have spent in the course of any given day on the phone himself?
Oh, dear. In a 12-hour day, yes, I would say in a 12-hour day, he was probably on the phone almost continuously at least two hours. If you put it all together, yes, at least 2 hours.
So. And probably 95% of those occasions, that telephone call, either before it was made or afterwards, passed through you in some way or other.
Most always. Of course, you have everyday callers. People here, and we had an awful lot of fallout from HEW first, even now yet, which are almost daily callers that don't come under that category, but others do.
In your role as attempting to perhaps respond to telephone calls or correspondence, did you find that you were frequently, again, in contact with people over at HEW for guidance, responses, mm-hmm. information, and what have you? Would it be fair to say that more than any other department agency,
yes,
that was where you went for information?
Right. Because an awful lot of people, and this really is not just limited to California, but people that needed information, and of course everyone thinks of it as being such a big place and they don't know where to begin, so they call us to find out where they should go. So we had an awful lot of that too, and we're still getting that. I had one call today, somebody who wanted to know who to call at HEW.
In a situation like that, was there any one individual that you called over there, or did it just depend upon the situation, the problem,
and the
request?
Situation. I tried not to bother any one person, because having been there myself and knowing what it was like, I've always tried to go to the particular department. And it helped, because I generally knew something. Again, I just don't believe in pushing off work on other people, because I know I'm busy, and I know that I don't like it when people do it to me. So it's easier if you know exactly where you're going.
I've got one question that involves an opinion on your part. Sometimes people throw up their hands and say, I can't answer that. And others give you some general answers, and sometimes others can be rather specific. Was there any one role, responsibility, or project that gave you particular satisfaction, enjoyment, or pleasure? Or were there several? Or?
Well, inasmuch as I never really could, I can't ever put myself in the category of handling projects as such, because I really didn't.
Okay.
Now, if you're going to talk about areas of work, that's different. Yes, now, to be perfectly selfish, I would have to say that the traveling, because I love it. But that's, well, a lot of people don't.
Oh, yes.
I happen to love the traveling. And I also have a very strong feeling that even when I travel, that I'll try to remember that I'm representing the president, and trying to, you know, not just to go along and type, but try to be my own goodwill ambassador on my own, particularly on these foreign trips. And now I love that, and that you know, that's
and
probably.
You said Mr. Finch made what, 400 to 500 speeches a year?
I think almost a year.
And of those, how many of them involve some sort of travel?
Almost all of them were travel. We made very few in this area in Washington.
And you were with him on most occasions?
Most occasions. So I did sometimes have to miss maybe New York, or where they were just one day and back, but almost always, if he traveled for any more than even one day, I went.
Mm-hmm. Does that include the campaign?
Yes.
This last campaign?
And 70. In 70, we were, I can't tell you off the top, we've got it all the statistics, but we went once for 6 weeks. I think we were just back one time.
You must like to travel if you want. Oh, living out of a suitcase for that period of time.
This fall we were gone from the convention to election day. I was home 9 days.
I think somebody on the staff told me that between September and October alone, Mr. Finch made somewhere in the vicinity of 60 to 70 speeches. Not including television appearances or drop-bys.
Oh, at least, yes. I'm sure of that.
Mm-hmm. That's a terrific schedule.
He's great. He's a good campaigner. He also gets that from his friend, too. They share interesting things like that. So as far as areas that I enjoyed, if you really, I think that's probably the one. But the other one would be, I don't know how to say it, just simply the thrill of working in the White House, and the thrill of working for the president after so many years of, you know.
That's particularly interesting, because I've asked several people who have been on the White House staff this question. And I said, was it the thrill of working in the White House? And in one or two instances they said, no, that thrill has more or less worn off.
I can't see it. I don't feel that way. It just kills me. I just love it. I don't see how anybody could say that, because how few people in their lifetime have the opportunity to work in the White House. Now, it may be that I have a stronger feeling for the president because of my long relationship with him. The fact that I was there through several losses, and as I was there in 60 and 62, and very closely tied in, and that might have a little more to do with it, where I'm concerned. But I. And it's probably why it means a lot more to me, because I waited so long to get here.
This must be terrible for you to have to make the decision as to whether or not to stay here or go with Mr. Finch to California.
No, there wasn't a decision, really, because I do work for him, and he has a political future, and that's where I belong. So that the when I say I hate to leave, it's I hate to leave, but
right.
the decision, it was just never in question.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're torn between two people
oh,
that
sure.
you have
oh,
worked
yes,
for.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And
but
and
even the
respect.
President would be the first one. When I'm hoping that we get a chance to say goodbye to him. I don't know that we will. I guess they're going to try to have. But I was thinking, if I get a chance to get in there and say goodbye to him, it will be the fifth time that I've left.
That must
Richard
be some
Nixon
sort of a
inside.
Record.
I know it. Because, yeah, it is. It's amazing. But, again, I always turn up again, so...
Yeah, your record of
you
having come back
on
board probably
right.
is also...
In 58, we went up, Pat Hillings took us over, and I had my picture taken with him and said goodbye and so on. And then, of course, a year later, we lost that year. A year later, I was back and waltzed into his office and said, here I am again. And so then in 60, when we lost, we all went in and said goodbye. And I remember cried and so on. But then I went back to California as Mr. Finch. Then in 63, I left Mr. Finch and I went back over to his law office to say goodbye to him. See, isn't that amazing? It's just, it's on.
Seems like it's just kind of a revolving door.
It is. It's just a continuous cycle.
If we wanted to reach you in 10 years to sit down and talk with you further in
mm-hmm.
depth about some of these things we've just touched on
mm-hmm.
briefly, would you have any idea how we could correspond with you
right. well, I would
through
venture,
Mr. Finch?
I would venture to say, since these some of us just always seem to stick together. And I mean, I don't envision myself ever getting very far away from these people. So I would imagine that any place that he is, or even the Nixon Foundation in California, that I'll always be tied into those people, even if I get married. And there's that, always that possibility.
With after the work you've put in.
I know, I can't.
Married life would seem rather dull.
Well, yes, but quite. You would have to be in the situation where I could work and so on.
Yes.
But even if I were to get married, I would never get out of politics or completely
break
away. And another thing, the Finches are like the Nixons in that once you're a part of their little family, you always stay with them. We still, every time we have a staff party, all the old people still come. It gets bigger and bigger, but... they still have contact with everyone who ever worked for them, so that that'll never happen.
I think in part that's a loyalty that
mm-hmm.
has been built up over the years through thick and through
mm-hmm.
thin, and
right. And you find it stronger among the people who were there through the thin.
Mm-hmm. That's where you really find out who's your friend and who isn't.
Right, because. The losing is so much harder than the winning, and you suffer so much more. And I think once you've suffered together, it binds you together.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So many of the people in the White House are very young, and the 68 campaign was their first one. And they're not aware of all the trials and tribulations that the people that have been around went through for so long. You know. And they only know the one side,
yes.
which
yes.
is the best side. But it doesn't always tell you as much about the people as the ones that go way back.
Mr. Nixon's political career has been a very long one and a unique one in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Almost there and then dropped out and then here again he comes on. Myself, I was a teenager in the 50s, so I knew of him then as a teenager and then in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And dropped out and then here again. I would probably be like many of these others who have come in the 68 campaign. I'm really not that
right.
familiar with his early period. There are several periods to his political career.
Right.
And yet, here in your case, you've
I have
been
really,
through
yes,
all of them.
Been through all of them. And, the only thing that I regret is that I don't have more of a record of it all.
Well, I do too, personally and professionally.
It drives me crazy. I just would wish so much that I had a better... I have marvelous mementos from them, you know, and things that I've been given them from when I worked for. And I have some... I have a personal letter from Mrs. Nixon, a handwritten personal letter from Mrs. Nixon, some things, but that's all I have. I mean, they're, you know, the memories and the things that have happened, just a shame that there's no way to record them.
You're not one of those diary types that...
No, I wish I were.
You wouldn't have time to do that in addition
That's
to everything
it.
Else.
And yet, a lot of the people do. I remember Mrs. Johnson wrote in her diary every night. And I think Mrs. Nixon keeps some sort of record.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. They almost have to. But, of course, people in my category don't have to, so we don't bother. But for your own personal...
Yes.
It's just a shame that you can't take time to keep a better record.
I often say to myself, 10 years from now, I'll have to pinch myself to make sure that this experience that I was so fortunate to have actually happened.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Like you, I don't take notes. I don't have a diary or anything. But, I'll regret it.
I know it. But
time sometimes...
It doesn't permit it. Mm.
Did your name appear in any articles that were written about Mr. Finch's role here? Was there anything published about his operation or his staff that touched upon your...
My name was mentioned in some things, but not describing my role in any way. In magazine or newspaper articles, occasionally it was mentioned, but only in terms of when I arrived for my appointment, his secretary, Doris Jones, ushered me in, period, end. Never in describing my job or anything. The only exception to that might have been the Leon Panetta book, which was an anti-Finch book,
yes.
Basically, on the Civil Rights Department at HEW. He refers to me in it several times, and in a little more, you know, not in a critical way, but so I don't consider that a very good source.
Well, that your opinion on that is very valuable to us, because we'll know now that mm-hmm. We shouldn't put too much stock in what
no.
Panetta had to say.
Well,
at least about
no,
you.
Because just picking out the few lines he wrote about me, they weren't accurate.
Okay, fine. That's great. That's the kind of information
you'd like to have. He describes
a
ride in the car one time with the boss tonight, and he said I was going out to buy birthday presents for him. And I wasn't. I was going to pick up his prescription for him. You know, things like that. So I know they weren't accurate.
Does that reflect the accuracy that one would find throughout
the
Panetta's
book?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's full of them. Because he was a very unhappy young man. Unfortunately, took it out of Mr. Finch, who had been his friend. None of us have ever understood that.
That's too bad.
Unfortunate, but today we don't even know where he is. It didn't help him. The book was not enough of a seller to do anything for him in any way, financially or as far as his own personal life is concerned. I don't even know where he is.
Was there anyone on the staff that you viewed as more or less your secretary?
Yes, Bobby Lundgren, who sat at the first desk and who just left. She wasn't my secretary, but she backed me up on the phones, and also she did typing for me and anything. She was just the second door of Jones that I didn't consider my secretary. We all worked for him, but she did help me there.
Would she ever substitute for you in any of these morning sessions with Mr. Finch or anything like that?
No, they all came in at night. Even if I was out, they generally didn't. Because that was just, I chose that time because I wanted it. You know, it wasn't particularly just that somebody be in here every day. It was just that I found that was my best time to get answers. People that would never believe me, you know, who would call in the morning and I'd say, I'll get back to you, and then I'd have to call them at 7 o'clock and say, would you believe I have not had a chance to talk to my boss? But in the White House, that's not unusual.
No,
everybody goes through the same thing. Everybody does.
It's incredible as much work is accomplished within this complex by so few people.
Right.
This is another one of the things that troubles me, that the people on the outside hear these statistics of the number of people that are here and think, boy, a lot of fat there, a lot of fat. And
have you been in private industry at all?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I've just been in 2 years. And I took 2 years to go and went to New York because I just had to find out what it was like on the outside. And I can tell you that it's just a real eye-opener. because they were, you know, 9 to 5, and everyone feels very put upon if they have to stay 30 more minutes. And no one ever heard of not taking a lunch hour. I haven't taken, never taken a lunch hour in my life unless I have something I want to do, which I just, I never thought about it. Wow, it's a real eye-opener.
Well, I've heard this from a number of other people on the White House staff who, like you, have mm-hmm. spent some time in private yeah. industry, and they say if private industry were as run as well as the Nixon
right.
White House was, wow.
And when those people complain about the number of people and the salaries, I always remind them they wouldn't consider
no.
doing what we do. And, you know.
I have asked you all of the questions that I wanted to touch upon. I don't know if there are any other comments you'd like to make. There, if there are, feel free.
Right.
What I will do now is go back and, within the next month, write a resume
mm-hmm.
of our discussion and send it to you
okay.
with the idea in mind that it's your convenience. You can look it over, make any modifications you
all
want,
right.
Deletions, changes of emphasis, style, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Send it back, we'll type up a final
copy. Probably sound terrible once you hear it back.
No,
again.
No.
Oh.
My voice always sounds terrible. I just sit and I don't like to hear my voice on tape.
I don't think anyone does.
I guess
you don't sound like yourself.
No, you, well, at least.
Mm-mm.
Well, anyway.
And two, you know, now I'll go home tonight and go to bed, and I'll lie there and think of all the things that I wish I had said or will come back to me. But
we'll make a note of them if you have time.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, listen, I could sit here for 24 hours and talk about Richard Nixon and Robert Fitch. So.
Well, I wish I had that much tape. And don't forget any of it, and really, when time permits, and this is what we hope to do at some point in the future, when we really get into details about the people and the projects, where we can talk about your opinions on these things. We feel very restricted at this point, because we hope to use this material both as a springboard for later interviews
mm-hmm.
with you, but also as some sort of a very superficial source of information for researchers
mm-hmm.
at the Nixon Library who come in and say, who was Doris Jones? What did she do?
Uh-huh.
We'll be able to pull this out and show them. And
no, I really haven't given you, I guess the other people have told you more about what he's done with his role as counselor. I didn't get into any of that because I assumed that George Grasmick and Ray and Bonnie and those people would give you more in-depth.
I
didn't even try to cover
topics.
On his programs and things. Because
again, what we're interested in at this point is primarily you and your role.
Mm-hmm.
And anything we pick up in addition to that is a windfall for us.
Mm-hmm.
Delighted to have it. But if we don't get it at this point, we don't feel as though we're hurting too much. We may at some point in the future come back and say, we've heard various members of the staff talk about this particular
mm-hmm.
project. Do you remember what
right.
Mr. Finch's reactions were to it, personally, officially? I'm sure that the number of projects that he was involved in were so extensive. That,
well, they were broad, you know, and important. But I just, again, I was not able to be deeply involved in them.
You
as some of the other people were.
Mm-hmm. You had enough to do. I would
Well, you know, a secretary's role is not the most important, but you can get awfully bogged down in everyday things that keep the office going.
Well, based upon some of the comments that other members of the staff have made about your unique role, I think you probably were at a policy level in this operation and had considerable influence over it. So.
I hope it was good.
Well, it had to be.
Oh, dear.
Mr. Finch's record has been one that's been very outstanding.
Well, and I think he'll continue to be.
Well,
the time will probably come and we'll all end up out in California.
4 years from now, we'll be out there. And
oh, dear.
So, I look forward to that opportunity to be out there and hopefully continue doing these oral history interviews.
Is that right? You think you'll be able to?
Oh, yes. Yes. We anticipate, let's say, our relatively small group of 4 or 5 people at this point, we hope will form the core of a mixing line grow. At this point, I think we're all of us of the opinion that we'll make a career out of it.
Very interesting. I've never thought much about it. It really is. Oh, well, then I'm sure our paths will cross.
Well, I hope so.
Wherever Robert Finch is, why, I'm never far behind.
Well, that's great. Well, I didn't mean to cut you off. Is there anything else that you feel at this point is significant that I've overlooked that gives any more perspective on your role and responsibilities and input?
I really don't think so. I think we pretty well covered it. Again, you know, you can could
well,
go on forever.
Tonight, when you remember some things,
make
jot them
notes.
Down and
okay.
Add to it when we come back.
Okay.
Let's see.